Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, oh, do I have a show for you today? First of all, I have just an unreal story of corporate greed that if it doesn't piss you off, something's wrong with you. There's something not clicking in your head if this doesn't get you angry. And I don't care if you're a liberal, I don't care if you're a conservative, you can be whatever the fuck you want to be, but when I tell you the story, you're going to go, whoa, I didn't know that was a thing. We also have Donald Trump started throwing some haymakers at Hillary Clinton over her basket of deplorables comment. The balls on this guy, man, it's unbelievable. Also, we have Trump taking a page out of Hillary Clinton's handbook and deciding to go full blast neocon. Wait until you hear who his new hires are. Spoiler alert, I actually just kind of said it anyway, they're neocons. And then later on in the show, we have a pharmaceutical company that basically is admitting that they want to keep marijuana illegal because it's competition. So without any consideration for what it does and how much it helps people and all that stuff, they want it to be banned. And, of course, we'll also talk a little bit. I say of course like this is not of course at all, but we're going to talk about physician-assisted suicide later on in the show. It's there's a prominent person, somewhat prominent person, who kind of has already signed up for it. So, you know, it opens up a long overdue conversation about that policy. It's kind of taboo in the U.S. to talk about it, and not many people entertain the idea, but we're going to do that. So anyway, let's get started here. And I want to do that with one of the leaders of Brexit had some thoughts on Hillary Clinton, and I'm going to tell you what I think about his thoughts. Let's do it. Nigel Farage, one of the leaders of Brexit, spoke to Fox Business about the state of the election, and he made an interesting point. So he said, "I think only one person comes out of this deplorably, and that's Hillary Clinton." Let me pause actually to tell you that he's referring specifically to Hillary Clinton's basket of deplorables comment about some of Donald Trump's supporters. So he continues and says, "What we've seen over the Western world over the last 10 or 20 years is this new sort of political aristocracy that has taken over. The Clinton family in America sum it up rather beautifully. If they think by insulting the silent majority that they are doing themselves a favor, effectively demeaning people by demonizing people, then they were in for a big shock in Brexit. I suspect she's in for a big shock, in this American campaign as well. She's part of that same kind of elite I saw in London, but in this case, based in Washington, D.C., who has absolutely no understanding of how ordinary people live their lives, people have simply had enough of being sneered at professional, career, political elites." Okay, so let me break this down in a few ways. First of all, in regards to the specific comment that he's talking about, it makes no sense because we covered it the other day. Everybody's pretending like she said all Trump supporters are deplorable. That's not what she said. In fact, she kind of bent over backwards to make clear many, many of them are victims of a shitty economic system that left them behind. So that's true. And it is also true that many of them are fucking deplorable. I mean, David Duke is one example, white nationalists and flat-out white supremacists who have come out of the woodworks to support him. You know, we went over some of the numbers the other day. In fact, I think I have them here somewhere. When you look at the poll numbers, many of them, yes, are deplorable. And if you object to that, then you're the one that's being the politically correct bitch, and you're being a right-wing social justice warrior, and you're not acknowledging reality. So, for example, 59% of Trump supporters think Obama isn't American. Is that a deplorable position? I think so. 31% want to ban gays from coming to the U.S. 87% want to ban all Muslims. So when she says, as she did, that about half of Trump supporters are really just bad people, and the other half, are, you could say, are genuine victims of a system that left them behind, and then they scapegoat as a result of that, I actually think that's a very fair comment to make. And, it's something that, if you go to the data and the information, there is backing for. Now, I would totally disagree with her if she said all Trump supporters are deplorable, because then what you're doing is you're downplaying and rejecting the idea that establishment Democrats and neoliberals have played a role in creating this shitty system that left them behind. So Paul Krugman recently made some comments that were along those lines, and I went after him for it because that's not true. But Hillary was a lot more nuanced, and I was surprised to see how nuanced she was in that comment. So in reference to the specific comment he's talking about, I think he's wrong. But a broader picture, so just broadly speaking, forgetting that comment from Hillary, and just speaking broadly about this political aristocracy, I think he's 100% right. Because what he's saying is out-of-touch elites are now so immensely disconnected from the people that they can't possibly understand the populist rage that is, reverberating through the country. And that was something that happened with Brexit, where everybody's like, oh, please, obviously, Britain's not going to vote to leave the EU. Duh. Well, turns out they did. Turns out they said, I've had enough of this shit, and they wanted more sovereignty. They felt like they didn't have control of their borders. And even if you say, well, that's not a legitimate issue, well, there are some legitimate economic issues about, the central planners not caring enough about making changes that affect regular people in a positive way in Britain and elsewhere. So, people said, fuck it, let's blow up the system and try to essentially start from scratch. God damn the consequences. Even if there's an initial tank in the market, which did happen, even if there are short-term problems, which did happen, well, the long-term goal is something that's preferable to trying to stick it out in the situation that we have right now. So it wasn't just like this right-wing xenophobic thing, and that's all the people who supported it. Of course, there are people like that who supported Brexit, but that's not the crux of it. It's not like there weren't any independent left-wing people who thought, no, it actually makes sense when you go to the policies and you look at it on paper. So, and that's the same thing going on now, is that, and it's not just Hillary Clinton, but it's the establishment Democrats in general. There is, though Hillary's Clinton comment was more nuanced in this instance, there is this idea of like, well, obviously you can't go for these crazy Republicans because they're so crazy, but vote for me, the Democrat who supported TPP, supported NAFTA, supported deregulation of Wall Street, is the ultimate insider, does Wall Street's bidding, does the bidding of the military-industrial complex, has a foundation that does pay for play in the case of Hillary Clinton. This idea, this smug idea of like they're so bad that now the Democrats can run to the right and can basically be the ultimate corporatists, and where are you going to go anyway? You can't go to the Republicans. They're fucking religious lunatics and flat earthers, to steal, Bill Maher's point, and Civil War reenactors. So are you going to go for those fucking crazy people? Be my guess, but us Democrats, we're going to be more reasonable. Sure, we'll throw you a bone every once in a while. Here, Obamacare, some weak kind of reform that somewhat helps you with health care. Here, we'll raise the minimum wage a little bit. Happy? Shut the fuck up. Okay, we're on the side of gay marriage. Yay, we're so progressive. But, oh, don't look now. We're in favor of the next trade deal. We're in favor of more deregulation of Wall Street, and we're in favor of continuing American empire. So that's the sense I get from what he's saying. Now, to be clear, Nigel Farage is an idiot right-winger, so let's get that on the record, and let me be crystal clear about that. And no, the Republicans indeed are not the answer to this problem, but is he right that there is a problem of political aristocracy, and is he right that it is true that, these elites feel so empowered when they shouldn't? they feel like we got this shit on lock because the other guys are so crazy, when they don't understand the disdain that's you know, for them too. 56% unfavorables for Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton in a recent poll. Think about that. That's unbelievable. Hillary Clinton is tied with Donald Trump in unfavorables. I mean, when it comes to trustworthy, Donald Trump is beating Hillary Clinton in some polls. How can that possibly be? Well, it's the case because they know what you are. They know you're an establishment insider. And further evidence for his point is that, I bring this up all the time, you can have the American people elect somebody, and then you come back a month later, 2 months later, and you do a poll. Hey, what do you think about the people you just elected in Congress? And Congress will have a 9% approval rating, maybe a 12% max approval rating. Okay, you just voted for those people. How is the approval rating so low? Because people know they're getting screwed, and people know the politicians are representing the corporations, and it's not just the shitty fucking Republicans who are backwards when it comes to corporations and social issues. It's also the Democrats who are more reasonable on social issues, a little bit more reasonable on economic issues, but still largely fucking you. So he's right. He's getting at a point here that is largely correct, which is, and this is not what he's saying, but it's an implication here. If the Democrats don't get their act together, if the Democrats don't become more progressive, more liberal, and actually represent the people, don't be surprised when they turn to an insane right-wing populist to, you know, fill that void, because they think that guy's got a better chance of blowing up the system and retooling it so that I'm not left behind. That is a thing that can happen. And if Hillary Clinton wins this election, believe me, it's not because of the overflowing love for her that people have. It's because at the last minute, people might understand and realize, well, that guy is worse. Hillary's still bad, but that guy's worse, so I guess we got to go for Hillary. That's best case scenario, and it's not, you don't want to be in a white knuckle election with a fascist buffoon, and the fact that Hillary is shows her weakness as a candidate and shows the general weakness of the establishment Democrats, and this doesn't go away with this election cycle. They're still going to be weak moving forward, and eventually the right-wing populace might burst that bubble, just like what happened with Brexit. So let's wake up and move in the right direction. Okay, next. What an amazing story of corporate greed I have for you guys here. This is unbelievable. We have an unreal story of corporate greed here from Raw Story. They report, the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, last week fined Wells Fargo $185 million after its employees opened up more than 2 million deposit and credit card accounts without consumers' permission. The employees did this because it helped them meet their sales targets and receive bigger bonuses. All right, so this is just a clear example of gaming the system from within the system. They're lying. They're cheating. I'm sure this obviously breaks some major law because they were fined over it, but is this fraud? I don't know what the exact law would be, but you can't do that. You can't just fucking open accounts, fake accounts, basically. And if I'm not mistaken, again, do it with real people's names, but open the accounts. What the fuck? So Wells Fargo, at the same time that this is going on, they just fired thousands of workers. Those things aren't necessarily linked, by the way, and I'm going to get to that in a second, but they're firing workers to downsize in general. But think about that. You had workers who were just fucking cheating and lying and doing anything to get more money, even though this isn't working harder, this isn't doing a better job, this isn't earning it, this is fucking cheating, and then getting caught. That's what happened. So, at the same time that's going on, get this. Quote, Fortune reports that Carrie Tolstedt, the executive in charge of the Wells Fargo unit that opened more than 2 million phony customer accounts, leaves the bank with a $125 million golden parachute. What? Wait. So you have this massive problem going on, blatantly, brazenly, overtly illegal shit to try to get a bonus when they didn't earn it, and obviously in the process hosing, you know, customers and clients of Wells Fargo. You're going to take the money and fucking give it to yourself. Obviously, that's missing out elsewhere then, correct? So you have these people doing this horrific thing, and the person who oversaw it all, they leave with a $125 million golden parachute. But see, this is the greed and the excess that Bernie Sanders was railing against the entire campaign. And people don't fucking bat an eyelash at it. They don't bat an eyelash at it. And it's not covered nearly as much as it should be. Go ahead, turn on CNN, turn on MSNBC. You honestly have a better shot of seeing a story about a fucking cat stuck in a tree. I saw CNN tweeting earlier this morning, I'm not kidding about this, a story about a woman who quit her job because she wanted to go jet skiing on bare feet. Or not jet skiing. It's the thing where you get pulled behind the boat and you hold on. Jet skiing is the fucking something different. But you hold on to the thing and the boat drives and then your feet are gliding across the water. No, water skiing. That's what it's called. I'm such an idiot. So, but they're talking about that. They're tweeting about that on CNN. Hello, is there maybe some real news to cover somewhere? Call me crazy. Look at this shit. This could never happen in a million years. If this was you, do you have any idea? You probably wouldn't just be fired. They would sue your ass. They'd be like, oh, you're responsible. You were supposed to oversee this, and people were, you know. They opened up $185 million worth of fake accounts to get a bigger bonus. You're responsible for it. You're overseeing it. But no, this person, though, is going to let you go and give you $125 million. Because understand, when you're part of the elite and when you're on Wall Street, normal consequences don't apply to you. Normal consequences don't apply to you. You think this is capitalism? You could be the biggest capitalist on the planet. This is not capitalism. This is corporatism. This is, hey, guess what? If everything goes to shit, don't worry. You still get rich. If everything goes well, you get rich. If everything goes to shit, you get rich. Even to the point of, in some cases, oh my God, we bankrupted our company, but it's okay. We paid our bribes to the government, so the government's going to come in and bail us out, and I'm going to still get mine. So I'm going to still get a bonus to my company from my shitty decisions. Does it work like that with your local dry cleaner? Hey, your local deli? If Joey's deli goes under, does the local government rush in and say, oh, Joey, oh, my God, what are we talking about? Here's money from the taxpayers. And by the way, here's money for a bonus. Your best deli went bankrupt. Why would you get a bonus? That's not capitalism. Capitalism would be, oh, okay, so you did a shitty job. You're done. I guess your business fails, and you got to find something else to do. But it never works like that for the elites. It never works like that for Wall Street. You could do the worst job imaginable. You still get a golden parachute of $125 million. So it's so funny that the people who want to lecture everybody else about personal responsibility and want to lecture everybody else about pulling themselves up by their bootstraps, they don't have personal responsibility and they don't pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. They don't, because if they did, what would have happened here? You're fired. You're not getting a bonus. You're lucky we don't fucking sue you. And oh yeah, everybody who engaged in doing this to try to get the bonus, lie, cheat, do illegal shit, we're going to bring charges against you and you're going to get your ass locked up. Instead, since it's Wells Fargo and they pay their bribes to the government, worst case scenario, you guys get a fine. We'll give you a little fine. Here's the fine, and let's almost, you know, match the number of the fine in a bonus that we give to the person who oversaw this monstrosity and all these illegal activities. So, guys, on Wall Street, they are the ultimate moochers. They are the ultimate welfare queens. They are the ultimate parasites. You know, this is why Bernie Sanders said, and he's not wrong, fraud is a business model on Wall Street. It's the whole point in many respects. He was referring to Goldman Sachs. Of course, the classic case of what happened at Goldman Sachs is they're selling these toxic subprime mortgage packages to their clients and telling them, don't worry, you're going to get rich off this. You're going to make a lot of money off this. At the same time they're doing that, they turn around and bet on those products to fail. That's fraud. You're selling something as if it's amazing, you're telling people it's amazing, and then behind the scenes you know it's a shitty product, so you're betting on it to fail. That's like selling a car without an engine. You sell the person a car without an engine, saying, oh, this is going to work great, and then you turn around and bet that the person won't make it out of the fucking lot. But they get away with it. Hey, worst case scenario, a little fine for you, a little slap on the wrist. That's it. No biggie. Those rules do not apply to you. You lose your job, you're Fucksville. You know, you own a small business and something happens, you're Fucksville. But if you're part of the elite, if you're an insider, oh, you can get away with anything. You can get away with anything. And on top of that, you not only get away with it, you get a fucking bonus at the end of it. I wonder why people are mad at the establishment, and I wonder why people are mad at the system. I can't figure it out. Okay. All right, I'm going to hold off on a couple of these Trump stories. Actually, let me jump ahead to the no debate moderator Trump story. So Donald Trump was panicking a little bit the other day because he's not sure he wants a debate moderator. Now, why would he not want a debate moderator? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because in the first town hall with Matt Lauer, there was this uproar and this outcry because Matt Lauer basically let Trump get away with some of his most brazen lies. Now, there were times where he said had somewhat difficult questions. I remember he brought up a tweet about how, you know, Trump said, "What did you expect? Obviously, there's going to be sexual assault in the military when you put men and women together." It was something to that effect. So he was, you know, caught on that, but Trump wiggled his way out of it by saying, "Many people think that tweet is exactly correct. Believe me, tremendous. I don't know what you're talking about." So in other respects, though, you know, when the Iraq war was discussed, Trump said, "I was against from the beginning." Hillary lied because Hillary beforehand had said, "No, he wasn't against from the beginning." So I'm like, "No, I was against from the beginning. I was against it from the beginning." And Matt Lauer kind of let that slide. But, it's factually incorrect to say he was against it from the beginning. He wasn't. There is audio of him on Howard Stern saying, "Yeah, I guess I'm for it." So now, again, you could say, well, Hillary's, you know, thing was still worse because she had power at the time and she voted for it, and you count that as a bigger strike against her. That's a fair position to have. But he didn't even get the fact out there that, no, Don, you're wrong. We have the audio of it. It is a fact that you indeed were for it. Even if you're tepidly for it or whatever, you were for it. Own it. So he let him get away with that. The backlash, everybody was saying, "Matt, you couldn't fucking do that. How the fuck are you going to let him get away with that?" Now people are going away thinking, "No, you're totally against it from the beginning." Well, Trump's like, "Oh, shit, maybe the next debate moderator will actually fact check me." So what did he say? Quote, "I think maybe we should have no moderator. Let Hillary and I sit there and just debate. I think the system is being rigged, so it's going to be a very unfair debate, and I can see it happening right now. Everyone's saying that Lauer was soft on Trump. Well, now the new person's going to try and be really hard on Trump just to show the establishment what he can do. So I think it's very unfair what they're doing. I think we should have a debate with no moderators, just Hillary and I sitting there and talking." Look at this little bitch. He's scared of actual fact-checkers. That is exactly what's happening. It is 100% what's happening. Now, you want to know why he's scared of fact-checkers? I mean, the answer is obvious. I shouldn't even have to fucking say it, and I don't have to say it because I think most of you get it. But the guy, part of what he does is he's really a master at making his lies appear like he's a down-the-line straight shooter who's not bullshitting you. He's really good at it. In fact, I'm kind of amazed by it. It's almost like you could see how big of a psychopath he is when you put the positions back to back. So the video on Libya is the classic example. Repeatedly, "We got to go into Libya. We got to topple Gaddafi. We got to do it. We got to get rid of him. We got to get rid of him. We got to do it." Tremendous, believe me. And then you go to the next video, and he's talking to Ted Cruz during the debate. He's like, "Libya? I never even discussed Libya. You're a liar, Ted." And you go, Jesus Christ, he was so confident the way he said that if you're watching it and you don't know the context and you know his previous comments, you're going to go, "I guess he didn't mention Libya," because he seems more forceful and he seems more passionate about saying he didn't support Libya than Ted Cruz sounded saying, "No, you did talk about Libya." So he's got this amazing ability to just redefine reality in a split second and make it seem like if you disagree with him, you're the one that's bullshitting. But no, he's the one that's bullshitting. He's just really good at bullshitting. That's his whole thing. he can lie over and over and over and totally get away with it. Now, I'm not saying Hillary Clinton is not a liar because she is a liar, but face it, Trump is way better at lying. So now he's like, no moderator, please no moderator. And again, I love making this point because it's so true. Look at this little fucking PC bitch, this little right-wing social justice warrior. He even says it. He's like, the next person's going to be really hard on Trump. I don't want that. Could you imagine a Democrat said that? Could you imagine Hillary Clinton was like, I don't want moderators because they're going to be really hard on me. Oh, are your feelings going to be hurt by somebody doing right by the country and fact-checking your bullshit? Oh, poor thing. But when Trump says it, still somehow everybody's like, oh, yeah, ha, keeping it real. They're not keeping it real. He's being a little bitch. He's being a little bitch. And again, so this all goes back also to Mitt Romney and President Obama. Because Candy Crowley decided to actually do her job for a split second and fact-check Mitt Romney when Mitt Romney was like, you didn't call what happened in Benghazi an act of terror. And Obama's like, hey, Slapstick, yes, I did. It's on video in the Rose Garden the day after. I called it an act of terror. He's like, no, you didn't. It took you weeks. It took you weeks. And Candy Crowley's like, yeah, no, he did kind of say the day after. And then the right wing was like, oh, how dare you! Giving actual information and data to inform the voters. I'm appalled. So the right wing has just been anti-fact since then. Well, for longer than that. But anti-debate moderators, because they know that they're going to get called out on their bullshit more because it's true that they lie more and they don't tell the truth way more. So, but now when they just come out and say it and Trump's like, you're going to be too hard on me. Like, where is people? Everybody should be saying what I'm saying right now, which is this is PC outrage. This is being a right-wing social justice warrior. You know, this is it's almost an admission of like, yeah, no, if they're going to do their fucking jobs, I'm not going to be able to take it. Well, then that certainly says something about who you are and what your positions are, and it says nothing about the moderator if when the moderator does their job, all of a sudden you're like, I'm not so sure I want one of these things. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, got a whole bunch more, including Donald Trump throws some haymakers at Hillary Clinton. Oops. Donald Trump throws haymakers at Hillary Clinton over the basket of deplorables comment. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
All right, we're back, guys. Here we go, here we go. Donald Trump started throwing some haymakers at Hillary Clinton over her basket of deplorables comment regarding some of his supporters. He said, "We have the support of cops, soldiers, carpenters, welders, the young and the old, and millions of working class families who just want a better future and a good job. These were the people Hillary Clinton so viciously demonized. These were among the countless Americans Hillary Clinton called deplorable, irredeemable, and un-American. She called these patriotic men and women every vile name in the book. She called racist, sexist, xenophobic, Islamophobic. Hillary divides people into baskets as though they were objects, not human beings. You cannot run for president if you have such contempt in your heart for the American voter, and she does. You can't lead this nation if you have such a low opinion for its citizens. If Hillary Clinton will not retract her comments in full, I don't see how she can credibly campaign any further." Okay, the balls on this guy are unbelievable. Drop out. I think I need you to drop out of this race. Tremendous, believe me. Let me just tell you. So, first of all, let's be clear about what she didn't say, because there is a lot of misinformation about this. Virtually every headline, and I'm not one to play the card of like, oh, the media is treating Hillary so unfairly. But the headlines were slightly misleading about this. So all the ones I saw, when I read the headlines, I thought, fucking Hillary, there you go again, making a stupid point. Then when I actually read her comments, I went, that's actually not that stupid. So she did not say all Trump supporters are in a basket of deplorables. In fact, she made very clear and pointed out that, no, it's some of them are in a basket of deplorables. Some of them are people who are genuine victims of a system that effectively left them behind. Now, that's the kind of nuance that you ain't going to get from Donald Trump on an issue like this. And she did go on to say, yeah, there are some who are just, you know, racist and bigoted and xenophobic, and we should all acknowledge that. But then there are others who are victims of a bad economic system, and those are the people who we need to work with and reach out to. So some people are trying to compare this to Mitt Romney's 47% comment. What Mitt Romney said was factually incorrect. Mitt Romney said 47% of the country, they're lazy, they're moochers, they're – why am I giving him a Trump accent? They're lazy, they're moochers, they're not going to stand up for themselves, they're not going to have personal responsibility. No, but if you go to the data, that is not true. He was saying, like, the Democrats are all lazy moochers, when, again, if you go to the economic data, you find out very quickly that the people who net receive more federal tax money in the country are Republicans. The red states are net tax receivers. The blue states are mostly net tax payers. So this idea, this myth of, like, the lazy Democrat, no, my God, that's the problem, that's factually not true. Now, is it true that some of Trump's supporters indeed are bigoted and xenophobic? Yeah, of course it is. And it's wrong to point that out? No, it is politically incorrect in some circles to point that out. But it is certainly true that they are bigoted. So we actually have facts on this. 59% of Trump supporters think Obama is an American. He provided his short-form birth certificate, his long-form birth certificate, a fucking announcement in the Hawaii newspaper when he was born. People to this day say, no, you're not American. No, no, you're not American. Now, that's weird. I know that the Republicans also despise Bill Clinton with a burning passion, but they never said about Bill Clinton, you aren't American. What's different about Obama which would lead them to say something like that? It's hard to figure out. Don't you dare call them bigoted, though. Don't you dare call them bigoted, because that I need a safe space when you do that. You know, you're triggering me if you say something that's true. Also, 31% want to ban gays from the U.S. What the fuck? And 87% of Trump supporters want to ban all Muslims from coming into the U.S. They agree with his proposal there. 87%! And Hillary goes out there and says, you know what? 50% of you are, you know, bigots and xenophobes and racists. And the other 50% are, yes, you're genuine victims who are kind of exploited by a bad economic system. And there's outrage over that? Dude, she could have said 87% and had some argument for it. I actually wouldn't agree with that, to be clear, because I think some people turn to that bigotry and scapegoat people because of their shitty economic circumstance. But she could have made that comment and still had some argument on her side for it. But she said 50-50, And people are, oh my goodness, how dare you say that? And then also, let's just note the irony. Donald Trump is going to attack Hillary Clinton for dividing people and dehumanizing people. There aren't enough palms for that face. Okay, you're the guy who says we should deport all undocumented immigrants. You think that's dividing people? No, I know. Of course not. You're the one who wants to ban all Muslims. Dividing people and making special rules for classes of people that you don't like? You think that's dehumanizing people? When you say, look, I got to keep all of you out because Al-Qaeda exists, therefore guilty enough, even though there's 1.6 billion Muslims, all of you are gone. Malala Yousafzai, don't you dare think about coming in here. You're all gone. Okay, this is the guy who is going to make the argument, Hillary Clinton, I can't believe Hillary Clinton. Look at what she says, dividing people, dehumanizing people. Right, unlike you, when you said we need to, quote, take out their families, talking about terrorists. So take out not just the terrorists, the families of terrorists. No, that's not dehumanizing. Of course not. That's why I say this. The balls on this guy, it's unbelievable. Because if you say anything, even if there's a factual basis to it, oh, drop out of the race. How dare you say things that are kind of true about my followers? You know, you say anything, that's the response. He gets away with everything. Everything. He could say, let's kill civilians. And people are like, yeah, that's his idea. Let's kill civilians. There's more outrage over Trump cursing and using naughty words than there is when he says, hey, let's kill civilians. The media is just flat out broken in this respect. And then the final point I'll make is, I have a quote here from Donald Trump at a recent rally. He said, quote, how stupid are the people of this country? Indeed did not, you know, come with a fucking giant barrel of nuance behind that, like Hillary did with her comment when she said, okay, about half of them are bigots and xenophobes, and then the other half are genuine victims and stuff. Trump just said, quote, how stupid are the people of this country? So what does that mean, Don? The people of this country, that sounds like you're talking about just Americans. Sounds like you're talking about all Americans. Should I clutch my pearls and should I say, how dare you make a comment like that? I think you should drop out of the race. You said, how stupid are the people of this country? If you think they're stupid, you're not going to represent them. I think you should drop out. You're not fit to lead. Now, should I make that argument? I'm not going to make that argument, but that's effectively the argument he's making. You're pointing out that racists and bigots exist, and many of them are my supporters. This is true. But you're not allowed to point that out because it's politically incorrect and because I need a safe space and you're triggering me, so now you should drop out. No, you should acknowledge reality, you should acknowledge the facts, and you should stop doing faux outrage, because that's exactly what this is. If Hillary Clinton had said all of Donald Trump's supporters in the basket of deplorables, which a lot of the headlines implied, oh, you're all the problem, you're all just bigots and racists and xenophobes and sexists and anti-Muslim bigots, and you go down the line. If she said that, I would say, no, that's not fair, that's not true. And, you know, you're the problem and you're covering for the shitty effects of neoliberalism that you helped push. That's what I would say. And that is what I did say when Paul Krugman made an argument that was much more along the lines of, yeah, they're just kind of racist, talking about Trump supporters. But Hillary's was more nuanced than that. You can argue over the percentages. And in fact, I'd probably agree with you if you say she's still being a little too harsh. But she was being significantly more nuanced. There is an argument for the point she's making. The poll data backs it up, and him saying you got to drop out is yet again him being a right-wing PC social justice warrior bitch. You've said way worse. You know you've said way worse, but you don't want to own up to it. You just want to point the finger at her and say everything's your fault and you drop out. Now, how about neither of you drop out, and you both continue with this shitty race, and I cry on election day because I won't like it when either one of you win. Okay. I got another one on Donald Trump. Oh, boy. This one may be the worst. Donald Trump took a page out of Hillary Clinton's book, and he decided to go full neocon. So The Intercept explains here, Donald Trump named former CIA director and extremist neoconservative James Woolsey his senior advisor on national security issues on Monday. Woolsey, who left the CIA in 1995, went on to become one of Washington's most outspoken promoters of the U.S. war in Iraq and the Middle East. He was a key member of the Project for the New American Century, a neoconservative think tank largely founded to encourage a second war with Iraq. Woolsey has also put himself in a position to profit from the wars he has promoted. He has served as vice president of Pentagon contracting giant Booz Allen and as chairman of Paladin Capital Group, a private equity fund that invests in national security and cybersecurity. He chairs the Leadership Council at the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a hawkish national security nonprofit, and is a venture partner with Lux Capital Management, which invests in emerging technologies like drones, satellite imaging, and artificial intelligence. Woolsey went on CNN on Monday and said that he was principally motivated to support Trump because of his plans to expand U.S. military spending. So Trump also, for the record, said that he'd hire John Bolton to be Secretary of State. For those of you who don't know, John Bolton is perhaps the worst neocon, worse than even Cheney. That's hard to say, but I think it's true. He's the dumbest, he's the least reflective, and he is the most reactionary in the sense that he really does call for war with everybody. Like, he wants war with Iran, he wants war with Syria, he wants any fucking country that it is 0.2% our enemy or more. He's like, war, do it, war, American power, that's what always solves everything. It solves everything. And this is why I call it a fundamentalist religion. Because the answer is always the same. To the people, to the neocons and the people who believe in American exceptionalism, the answer is always more war, more torture, more America, never less. And we can fix everything, even though it's been demonstrably proven that we can't. And also the hilarious contradiction in their ideology of, at the same time that we want war with everybody, strengthen our relationship with Saudi Arabia. So the people who are most responsible for spreading radical Islamic terrorism, they're like, no, they're cool. They're cool. But everybody else, we're going to come after everybody else. So buckle up. It's just the dumbest position on the planet. Also, Woolsey has previously called for NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden, quote, to be hanged by the neck until he's dead rather than merely executed or electrocuted. So Trump hired a guy who wants to murder Edward Snowden for being an American hero and standing up for the Constitution. Trump is hiring a guy who is one of the worst offenders and neocons. He also is trying to hire the worst neocon, John Bolton, to be Secretary of State, which would be an utter disaster. And somehow he also manages to go around and pretend that at times he's not interventionist. That's cute. So, look, I want to be crystal clear about all this stuff. Do I think Hillary Clinton, is pandering to neocons and agrees with neocons on a lot of stuff? Yes, I do, which is why I think she'd be a disastrous president. She's way too hawkish. Her stance on Syria is horrific. She wants a no-fly zone, which would escalate and get us more involved and may even lead to World War III with Russia, because if Russian planes go into the no-fly zone, what are you going to do, shoot them down and start World War III? Terrible idea. She was against even negotiating with Iran in the first place, even though now she takes credit for the deal. That's a fucking disaster also. She called Obama naive for wanting to talk to Iran without preconditions. She was dead wrong on that. She's still way too hawkish in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the list goes on and on. So I have zero love for Hillary Clinton on foreign policy. Everybody knows that. But my point is, if I had to guess how Trump would be when he's president and where the actual evidence points to, I think whatever he said that's non-interventionist is just rhetoric. And what he would actually do is he wants to be a big-time player, guys. He wants to be an insider. He wants to be part of the establishment. He's been yearning for establishment respect his entire life. So when he finally gets a little bit of it with certain neocons like John Bolton and this guy James Woolsey here, when he finally gets them on his team and yes, I'm a player. I have big names with me now, people who are insiders in Washington. You don't think he's going to do their bidding? You don't think he's going to listen to them? I think he absolutely is. you know, you can say you're the most non-interventionist guy there is, but if you hire James Woolsey and John Bolton, I mean, that would be like Bernie Sanders hiring James Woolsey or John Bolton. You know, he says, "Oh, let's stop doing regime change. Let's nip it in the bud." But if he hired those people, everybody, even the biggest Bernie supporters, I would certainly say, "But what the fuck are you doing, Bernie? I guess you're lying to me about all the non-interventionist stuff. You just hired the biggest interventionists, the biggest ones." So that's unacceptable. It'd be unacceptable in Bernie's situation. It's unacceptable in Trump's situation. So bottom line, you vote for Hillary Clinton, you get a neocon. You vote for Donald Trump, you get a neocon. That's where we're at right now. And this, unfortunately, is the state of the race. And this is what I think is the worst race in American history. Although the one with Van Buren was a son of a bitch. That was a terrible joke. but no, this really is one of the worst, if not the worst, elections in American history. Because they're both proven liars. They're both, at the end of the day, corrupt insiders. Hillary has a longer track record, and she's played that game longer. And they're also going to be neocons. Hear me now. Quote me later. If you think Trump is some sort of if you think Trump is some sort of anti-establishment savior, you are dead wrong. Okay. All righty, let's do probably one more here before the final break. A pharmaceutical company has admitted the obvious in a letter to the SEC. The Intercept reports here. Pharmaceutical executives who recently made a major donation to an anti-marijuana legalization campaign claimed they were doing so out of concern for the safety of children, but their investor filings reveal that pot poses a direct threat to their plans to cash in on a synthetic cannabis product they have developed. On August 31st, Insys Therapeutics company donated $500,000 to Arizonans for Responsible Drug Policy, becoming the single largest donor to the group leading the charge to defeat a ballot measure in Arizona to legalize marijuana. So here's what's been revealed and what they said to the SEC in their statement. Legalization of marijuana or non-synthetic cannabinoids in the United States could significantly limit the commercial success of any dronabinol product candidate. That's the synthetic marijuana that they're creating. If marijuana or non-synthetic cannabinoids were legalized in the United States, the market for dronabinol product sales would likely be significantly reduced, and our ability to generate revenue and our business prospects would be materially adversely affected. So they're just saying it now. we're going to pretend for a split second that the reason why we're opposing this is because we care about kids, bro. As a pharmaceutical company that doles out drugs endlessly, we care so much about kids taking drugs. We don't want them to take them, unless there are drugs. And then they go on to admit it to the SEC. We're opposing it because we're creating some sort of synthetic marijuana. Obviously, the real marijuana would take away the market for the synthetic marijuana that we're creating and we can profit off of. So we're just going to try to ban actual marijuana from being legalized. We're going to stop that. We're going to try to stop that. Okay, this is exactly like Sheldon Adelson and what he did with gambling. He made all of his money from gambling. He made all of his money from casinos. He owns casinos. And then what does he do? He pays politicians to go out there and shut down online gambling, and he uses the argument, "I care about the kids. That's all I care about." No, you don't. You care about having a monopoly in the field of gambling and forcing people to come to your casinos because you know it's a threat to your casinos if they can lay around in their underwear and play online poker. So they're just fucking liars is what they are. They lied up front, but now we know that what they said to the SEC, and they're letting it all hang out. You know, like, okay, yeah, no, this is, I want to make more money, so this is what I'm going to do. Guys, did you know, this is incredible, they're blocking marijuana legalization. They sell a version of fentanyl. Fentanyl is one of the most potent, opiates out there. It's way more powerful than heroin and morphine. So they sell that. That kills way more people than marijuana. Marijuana doesn't kill anybody. You can't OD on marijuana. So they're like, ban this one that nobody overdoses on, and we're going to keep selling this one that people overdose on all the time. It is unbelievable hypocrisy. Again, so this goes back to the story we covered a few weeks ago with Kratom. For those of you who don't know, Kratom helps people with a million different things. Some people take it to end PTSD. Some people take it to fight depression. Some people take it, to wean their way off of a pill addiction or a heroin addiction. It has helped countless people. I actually take Kratom recreationally because I think it's an awesome fucking drug. So the DEA steps in and they go, yeah, no, banned. Wait, what? Why? This isn't hurting anybody. Like, okay, no, but I don't know. 15 people called the poison control centers 4 or 5 years ago because they were on Kratom. Ha, gotcha. Wait, what? That's not a reason to ban it. And by the way, when you dug deeper in those cases, they had mixed drugs. So it wasn't the Kratom that made them fucking go there. And then they say, well, but it increased to a couple hundred cases a few years later. Yeah, because Kratom use exploded. So back then, fucking -8 people were taking Kratom. Today, probably hundreds of thousands or millions of people are taking it. And now they're like, well, yeah, but there were just a few, and now there are a couple hundred cases of people calling poison control centers, so we're going to ban it. Do you have any idea the damage you're doing and how much you're hurting regular people? But either they don't know, or they know and they don't care because they're doing the bidding of the big pharma companies, and the big pharma companies go, whoa, 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 why are we selling fewer pain pills? Why are we not making as much money off of opiates and opioids? What's going on here? I don't like this. Oh, it turns out that something came along which is much, much, much safer, a better drug, and makes it so people don't need your shitty drug. So what do? I don't know, maybe make a few phone calls and say, X-ray on the Kratom scale, and then boom, banned. Look at what we're dealing with, man. They're not making decisions based off of science. They're not making decisions based off of your well-being or freedom or liberty. They're making decisions and people are getting involved and throwing their money around to try to keep a system rigged to keep making money for themselves. That's what this is. And that's grotesque. We can't have that, man. You don't know how many people you're adversely affecting when you do shit like this. So we got to get the money out of the system, and we certainly have to make it so that big pharma can't call shots on what drugs should and shouldn't be legalized. They obviously have a conflict of interest. You know, you can't have it so the last people who should be making these policy decisions are influencing and or making these policy decisions, and that's what's happening right now. Okay. All right, let's take a break, and when we come back, I got a wealthy Montana Republican who loves oligarchy explaining to you how he loves oligarchy. And the Independent is reporting on a story about a woman who's working to destigmatize physician-assisted suicide. All right. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back with all that and much more. Don't miss it. We'll be right back. son of a bitch. All right, we're back, guys. Okay. Let's talk about this jackass in Montana. He's one of the 12 people there, and he's a prick. A wealthy Montana Republican named Robert Saunders is challenging Democratic State Representative Jessica Caralla, and he made some pretty questionable remarks at Patrick Henry College back in March. He said, "Is it a desirable condition that between 40 to 50% of the members of the U.S. Congress have more than $1 million in assets when less than 1% of the population of the USA has that level of wealth? The Founding Fathers thought so. Our form of government was designed so that only people with a stake in the country's future could vote. In the early days, this meant that only people who owned property could vote, just like today in business, only shareholders in the company can vote. Likewise, only people who owned property could run for public office. Know why? Because the founders rightly believed that the people with the most to lose would be the least likely to screw up. People with money have the time and opportunity to educate themselves and a vested interest in doing so. Transients, college kids, and others without a dollar to their name have nothing to lose and are thus extremely unsafe custodians of power, being more likely to experiment, often with catastrophic results. That's why people think it's a good thing that our leadership is generally relatively wealthy. Life under the leadership of people with lots to lose, while certainly not perfect, has always been proven to be better than life under people with nothing to lose. Stability and the rule of law is definitely preferable to the alternative." So his opponent pointed out, oh, okay, so you're a fan of oligarchy. I mean, that's what it is. That's what you're describing. You know, the wealthy in society should rule over everybody else, my good sir. I believe so because we're a superior breed of human and we've had better experience and we have a stake in the game. So all you poor peasants who are out there doing your thing, please, please don't get in my way while I make all the decisions for you. So, you know, his opponent's like, oh, okay, you like oligarchy. So what does he do? He sends her a cease and desist letter, and he says, if you say that again, I'm going to sue you. What? And by the way, he says in the letter, he cites two other cases of libel from Montana where people were sued for, not, I guess, something vaguely similar to this. The cases he cites, they ended up losing. His side ended up losing. So what are you doing? They're like, oh, I'm just going to drag you through an unnecessary court process and make you spend money. That's basically the threat that's going on here. Unbelievable clown this guy is. Okay, jackass, own up to what your thoughts are. You said this. We know you said this. That is the definition of oligarchy. So just say you love it. Just say, look, you're admitting you love it. Just tie the word to it because that's the definition of it. I like it when rich people are the only ones with the power and the only ones with control, and they're the ones who get to make the decisions. That's what I like. That's what I like. And by the way, he says it as if, like other people chose not to have power and wealth and money at the time. As if, you know, black people at the founding were like, it's cool, white people, you go do your thing. We're fine being property. No, it was by force people did not have wealth and power in society. You know, women were not equal citizens. Blacks were slaves. You know, it's not like the system was geared towards making it so that poor whites can have an opportunity to make it into the elite class. No, that's not what happened. What happened is the people with the power wanted to keep the power. So it's not like, oh my God, it's a meritocracy and they rose through the ranks and now they rightly control everybody. No, they had power and they wanted to maintain it by any means necessary. They're not necessarily smarter or, you know, whatever, or they make better decisions for everybody. No, it's not based on merit. I mean, for fuck's sake, man, it's so easy to see. This idea of like, well, rich people, they're just a superior breed of human. Donald Trump, I rest my case. Paris Hilton, I rest my case. There are plenty of rich people who are fucking morons and who are way bigger morons than many good people who make $30,000 a year. So this idea, it's such a childish idea. It's you look at the way things work and just assume, well, it must have made sense for some reason, or not. or slavery was fucking stupid. Women being second-class citizens was fucking stupid. A system where the elite tried to hold on to their power by any means necessary was fucking stupid. They just, you know what it is? They have this superiority complex of, well, we're on top. There must be a reason why we're on top, even though we're probably just born into it because daddy was rich. But we're on top, so we got to keep it this way, right? That's what, so it's better when we make decisions for everybody else. Yeah, those decisions worked out really well, didn't they? It turns out that those decisions kept them rich and kept everybody else impoverished. Like, it's such a position that's not thoughtful that it's laughable. And then when you call it out for what it is, oh, you like oligarchy. Oh, how dare you describe my position accurately? I'm so offended. I don't give a fuck if you're offended. It's true. Okay. Lawmakers are shockingly on board with the idea of allowing 9/11 victims to sue Saudi Arabia, and the White House isn't having it. Raw Story explains, President Obama would veto a bill passed by both houses of Congress that would allow families of victims of the September 11th attacks to sue the government of Saudi Arabia for damages. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said on Monday, it's not hard to imagine, quote, it's not hard to imagine other countries using this law as an excuse to haul U.S. diplomats or U.S. service members or even U.S. companies into courts all around the world, Earnest told reporters in a daily briefing. I do anticipate the president would veto this legislation when it is presented to him, he said. Okay, so I need you to understand, we covered a story not that long ago. Somebody did sue Iran in a U.S. court. And the court said, no, totally, Iran owes you however many millions or billions of dollars it was. And by the way, they sued Iran over 9/11. Iran had absolutely nothing to do with 9/11. Nothing to do with it. But somebody sued Iran in a U.S. court, won, and got millions or billions of dollars again. Forgive me for not remembering the exact number. But now all of a sudden when it comes to somebody who's not our enemy but our ally, Saudi Arabia, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. And the president is like, yeah, I'd have to veto that. So what does this come down to? Well, it comes down to always protecting your business partner. That's what it is. So, I mean, think about it. We invaded Afghanistan over 9/11. We invaded Iraq, a country that did not attack us. We waged an offensive war against a country that didn't attack us over 9/11. They had nothing to do with it. Could you imagine if instead of invading Iraq, they did legislation that's like, you know, maybe the victims of 9/11 should be able to sue Iraq. This is, I'm saying back when we thought they were responsible. Okay, that would seem like a weak policy, right? It would seem like, oh, you're doing the absolute bare minimum you could do if indeed Iraq was responsible for 9/11, like just allowing them to sue. Well, now we know, based off the 28 pages that are finally unredacted, that, yeah, there's some evidence that there are individuals within the Saudi government who were responsible for funding 9/11 and helping the 9/11 hijackers. And what is it, 15 of the 19 hijackers were 9/11? So now we know that they're the most responsible if any state or government is responsible. And they're like, you can't even fucking sue them. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Forget invading. I mean, again, we invaded Iraq when it was the wrong country. Would they ever invade Saudi Arabia over this? Not that I want that. Again, I don't want that. But if it was the same response for the people who actually did it or were most responsible for it, it would be an invasion, right? That's what we did in Iraq. That's what we did in Afghanistan. Like, oh, invasion. No, no, they're our ally. They're our buddy. They give us the oil cum shot on our face every Friday. So obviously, we need to love them and adore them and gently masturbate them, and that's the way the system works. So they get to spit in our eye, they get to fund, 9/11 terrorists, and we get to hold hands and sing kumbaya with them. Literally, George W. Bush held hands with the fucking Saudi prince. Literally. Literally. Or the Saudi king, I should say. All right. Look at how, and this goes back to the main point, look at how you think foreign policy is made based off of human rights, based off of altruism, based off of even being the world policeman. based off of reason and rationality and having a logical response to different actions. It's got nothing to do with any of that. It's all about the global order. It's all about corporatism and business interests. It's all about natural resources. And it's all about protecting that status quo by any means necessary, even when we know Saudi Arabia was most responsible of all the different governments for 9/11. Not only are they not going to invade them, they are fucking not even going to allow the victims' families to sue the country. To sue, I don't know if it's the actual government or the individuals within the government who there's more evidence that they're responsible for, but they won't allow them to sue them. But you can sue Iran, who had nothing to do with it. I mean, the system is almost beyond parody. It's so ridiculous. The Independent is reporting on a story about a woman who's working to destigmatize physician-assisted suicide. They say a Belgian Paralympian who suffers from an incurable degenerative muscle disease says she will undertake euthanasia, but not yet. Marieke Vervoet, 37 years old, was speaking after claiming the silver medal in her event at the Rio Paralympics and said she was, quote, still enjoying every moment. Vervoet, who won a silver and a gold medal at London 2012, explains she signed papers in 2008 to undergo the procedure, which is legal in Belgium, BBC reports. She said, quote, when the moment comes when I have more bad days than good days, then I have my euthanasia papers. But the time is not there yet. Ms. Vervoet's condition, which she was diagnosed with at age 14, causes her constant pain, paralysis of her legs, and seizures, preventing her from sleeping properly. Okay, so this is pretty brave, actually, because what you're doing is you're taking this super-duper taboo issue. And maybe it's less taboo there, so it's a different story, but certainly in the U.S., this is a taboo subject, man. Nobody wants to bring up, hey, so when you're about to die, when you're in a lot of pain, when you have, like, terminal illness, should you be able to say, I want to go? Death is like a very taboo subject in the United States. And this is somebody who's somewhat known, you know, and somebody who's a Paralympian and has won medals. And she's saying, yeah, to me it's not really that difficult. When I get to the point where the pain is too excruciating, what am I going to do? Of course I'm going to go. And I feel like this isn't a thing that many people think about. But it's a fact of reality. Now, obviously, it doesn't happen to everybody, and people go in different ways. But, yeah, terminal illnesses exist, and oftentimes those terminal illnesses are excruciatingly painful. And it is the more sympathetic thing, an empathetic thing, to let somebody say, you know what, I want to make the decision when I go because I'm in too much pain. And you can have your family there, you could have your loved ones there, your friends there. And, you know, you can make it so that it doesn't have to be the saddest thing in the world. If anything, you're relieving your pain, and everybody else around you can acknowledge that, and you can move forward like adults. But, you know, I feel like, if anything, in the U.S., the more prevalent position, at least definitely by law, is the more callous position and the more selfish position. I feel like when we don't let people make their own decisions like this, well, then you have it's the family members and the friends and everybody else being selfish about keeping you around when you're admittedly saying, I can't be around anymore, I'm in too much pain. And lest you think, oh, I'd never be in that position, dude, it depends on what your pain threshold is, of course, and some people have a higher pain threshold and some people have a lower pain threshold. But, yeah, there is the breaking point for anybody with pain. You know, this idea that if you sit there and you have fucking stage 4 cancer and you're in excruciating pain all the time, that, no, I would never want to say, fuck it, I'm going to go, when there's no light at the end of the tunnel. What are you going to do? Well, maybe I'll wake up tomorrow and I'll feel better, but you won't. And that's just one example. You're talking about a degenerative muscle disease here. Apparently it's the same thing, where, you know, there are many, many painful, terrible ways to go. And if you can control your own destiny and say, look, I love life, I don't hate life, but when it gets to that point, you got to be realistic about it, and, you know, we can do it the right way. What the fuck could be the downside of that? Seriously, what could be the downside of that? Especially with the added benefit of, okay, if you don't go that way, and choose it, well, then you go randomly one day and you don't have that situation where all your friends and family are around, and you can, you know, make it a thing where it's a transition in, you know, into ending your pain. So I think it's brave when people talk about it, and it's something that needs to be talked about more. I mean, we covered the story. I forget the woman's name now, and I apologize for that because I shouldn't forget her name. But there was somebody here who, what is it, three states, four states in the U.S. that allow physician-assisted suicide, and she documented everything she went through. She's like, look, I don't hate life, but this is, I know I'm going to be in so much pain, and eventually I'm going to want to go. And then eventually she went, and she worked to destigmatize it and say this is should be a choice everybody has. She had to move from whatever state she was living in to go to a different state because it was one of few states that allowed it, and she's like, I shouldn't have had to make that move. We should legalize this all around the country, so on and so forth. Yeah, I don't think it's a difficult issue. I really don't. And I think that when we don't act on it and don't change the laws to reflect it, we're being more callous, not less callous. You know, if you really respect people's individualism, their freedom, their liberty, and their ability to know more about themselves than you know about them, well, then you say, of course. You have the option. If it's too far gone and you're in too much pain, you can safely, you know, and in a way that is totally painless, end your life. Being able to choose how and when you go and in a painless way, I think is something that's way more appealing than not knowing when you're going to go and perhaps going in an excruciatingly painful way. You know, drifting off into nothingness by taking a drug that just basically makes you go to sleep and you never wake up is a lot less scary than, you know, worrying, oh my God, I'm going to have a heart attack and be in pain for the last fucking 37 seconds of my life and knowing I'm going to die and all that stuff. So I don't think it's a difficult question, and I salute the Belgian Paralympian who went public with this, saying, yeah, eventually I'm going to do it, and I don't think that's crazy. Okay, so I have two more left. We might end early today. We'll see. We'll see. I have a new example for you of junk science that was apparently pushed on the public. This is reminiscent of the smoking doesn't cause cancer movement, if you guys remember that, and the climate change is a hoax movement, which is still quite prevalent. So Raw Story explains, as nutrition debates raged in the 1960s, prominent Harvard nutritionists published two reviews in a top medical journal downplaying the role of sugar in coronary heart disease. Newly unearthed documents reveal what they didn't say. A sugar industry trade group initiated and paid for the studies, examined drafts, and laid out a clear objective to protect sugar's reputation in the public eye. That revelation, published Monday in the Journal of the American Medical Association Internal Medicine, comes from Dr. Kristen Kearns at the University of California, San Francisco, a dentist-turned-researcher who found the sugar industry's fingerprints while digging through boxes of letters in the basement of a Harvard library. So there you have it yet again, industry corrupting science, making it indeed non-science, making it junk science because the conclusions are indeed not scientific because they corrupted it, and it was basically fooling everybody for the longest time. And again, that is exactly like the smoking doesn't cause cancer people. A lot of the people who were in the smoking doesn't cause cancer movement have now graduated to the climate change is a hoax movement. So you some of the literal same researchers making the arguments, okay? So known hacks and frauds, and now they're back out there like, what do you mean? I'm a doctor, so listen to what I have to say. I'm a scientist, so I must be right, even though all the other scientists are saying the opposite, and they don't have financial conflicts of interest, but don't look at that. Don't pay any attention to that. They did the same thing with fucking sugar, man. You know, when it comes to science, it really is one of those things where you always have to look at the funding. Because if it's funded by a for-profit private corporation, you have to go, what's your motivation? What's your motivation? So you're a for-profit company. You're taking all this money and throwing it for studies. Why are you doing that? You're for-profit, so you don't want to get rid of money for no goddamn reason. They obviously have an ulterior motive. I want to try to portray something as this way as opposed to that way because that'll further help my bottom line. Now, oftentimes you hear the argument from the right, you got to be, you know, concerned about the government funding too. That's not true. That's just not true. Because oftentimes the government funding, it's to public universities or just universities. And honestly, the grants are really not a lot. So nobody's getting rich off of it. Nobody's getting rich off of the science funded by the government. And there is no conflict of interest. What benefit would it be for the government to say climate change is happening? I mean, that's something that they're fucking terrified of. They don't want to deal with the consequences and the trillions of dollars that they're going to have to fucking fork out to do the cleanup for, you know, everything that's happening and everything that's going wrong, from the rising sea levels to the problem with drought and food sources to, you know, running out of fresh water in certain places. They don't want to waste all this money on this thing, which is a problem. So what incentive is it for the government to say, okay, we have a climate crisis here? There is no incentive for it. Now, honestly, some people say, well, it's because the scientists are trying to get rich. But I just told you, I fucking have a cousin who now he's not working in the United States anymore, but he was a scientist, and he was a scientist in the United States, not working for a private company, so it was government funding. They don't make dick. They don't make dick. They don't make anything. So it's not fucking greedy scientists. It's not that the government wants to push the idea of climate change for no possible benefit. In fact, it's going to hurt the government too. So why would they do it? There is no conflict of interest. There is no massive problem here, or there is no massive gain here that happens from the government-funded science. Now, with the private corporation, you can see the conflict of interest. Hey, an oil company, why would they want to say climate change isn't happening? Oh, I don't know. Maybe because fucking big oil is one of the biggest things contributing to it. And if we move towards green technology, we would have to wean ourselves totally off of big oil. So they want to their asses and protect their jobs. I mean, it's so obvious to see where the conflict of interest is, who can be lying, who literally has perverted the scientific process in some instances to lie. There's not an equivalence here with, oh, the government science versus the privately funded biased non-science. That's not a thing. So if you think it is, you're totally misunderstanding the situation. And now you have another example of it right here. Sugar companies funding studies that say sugar is totally cool. Yeah, I wonder who's biased in that respect. So it's been acknowledged for a long time that dolphins are smart, but we didn't really know how smart until now. So The Independent is reporting on a study published in the journal Mathematics and Physics, and they say dolphins are capable of, quote, highly developed spoken language, which closely resembles human communication. While it has long been acknowledged, dolphins are of high intelligence and can communicate within a larger pack, their ability to converse with each other individually has been less understood. Researchers believe that pulses, clicks, and whistles of up to 5 words made by dolphins are listened to fully by another before a response is made. Then they say, however, the dolphin speech unfortunately lies beyond the time and frequency characteristics of the human hearing and is thus unavailable to humans. So I don't know what techniques they use to determine that this indeed was happening and that it is a language, but they say that the naked ear, if you will, we can't make it out. It's just on a different frequency. It's like fucking echolocation or some shit where we're just incapable of doing it. we just don't have that faculty, that ability. But isn't this fascinating? So it's weird because with humans, we have this thing where if you're not exactly like us, and even if you are exactly like us, but you happen to be a different skin color, for example, there's this weird tribalism thing that happens and this kind of dehumanization that happens, where even among humans, if the human isn't the same race as you or the same religion as you or whatever, ethnic background, you name it, people go, oh, okay, I see that you're human at this point in history. But I don't know, there's still like a skepticism, an innate unconscious skepticism, and some form of tribalism in this in-group, out-group mentality. So if even among humans there's that impulse, well then for fuck's sake, there's almost no hope for like a dolphin situation where humans will look at dolphins and go, oh shit, you might be like somewhat in the ballpark of being, you know, smart as I am. because it's a totally different kind of thing. Like, it's hard for us to conceptualize that something that is not exactly like us can be subject to these basically high-functioning, you know, aspects of consciousness. But that they're saying they have that. They have this high-functioning kind of consciousness, which, again, is fascinating and it's amazing. And this is why, you know, the whole conversation of animal rights, I've always been kind of confused by it and just agnostic in general about it because, okay, I obviously get the appeal of, well, if you have something that is of high intelligence, you can't treat that thing like you would treat an animal of no intelligence or low intelligence or one that's not conscious. So obviously if it's some sort of primate, yeah, what are you doing? Don't be a dick to the primate. Like, that's fucked up. Like, there's something that strikes a nerve there, at least with me and among other people. Obviously others disagree, but something strikes a nerve there. I'm like, ooh, that doesn't feel right. Should you really lock up these highly intelligent beings in these cages and fucking, you know, be so unreflective about the consequences of doing this and how it reflects on you and all that stuff? But dolphins, same thing. They say killer whales also have a high level of consciousness as well. But then it gets blurry to me. Like, so what happens when you get lower on the chain? So what happens when you get to a fucking caterpillar? What happens when you get to a gnat? So I never had a good answer for that, and I never knew where to draw the line on animal rights, if you will. You know, like, so I eat meat. I'm not vegetarian. I'm not vegan. Is it something that's moral or immoral? Like, is there a question there? Sure, there's a question there. Of course there's a question there. There's a reasonable question there. If you eat bacon, you're eating a pig. Well, pigs are very similar in their outlook, I guess you could say, or how they act. It's very similar to dogs. You know, it's not like they're this idea of them is like totally not like dogs is a myth. So you're eating something that has a similar, you know, mental profile and level of consciousness to your dog. Now, if you eat your dog, you're like, whoa, that's crazy. I don't want to do that. I connect with that. That's my dog. But if you do it with a pig, you're like, oh, bacon, delicious. But there is a contradiction there. There is a problem there. There is something that, you know, you got to acknowledge. There's some hypocrisy there. Cows, same thing. I don't know how intelligent cows are, but, you know, deer, you can eat all these different things, and it's like, is that a level of consciousness in that thing where it should make us uncomfortable that we're eating that thing? I don't know. These are all interesting questions to me. I don't have good answers for it, but for some reason, I do have a strong answer, or at least the impulse is strong in this direction. When you talk about, like, dolphins or gorillas or monkeys or primates, you know, or killer whales, for them, I say, yeah, no, I don't. This isn't a question. Obviously, you shouldn't eat it and can't eat it. Obviously, you shouldn't have them in captivity. You shouldn't just go around marauding them and slaughtering them. So it does apply there. I don't know why it doesn't apply. I don't have a good reason for why it doesn't apply for pigs and cows and stuff like that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying ban those things. I genuinely don't have an answer. But all I'm saying, those contradictions exist, and I feel like people don't acknowledge them or don't discuss them or don't think about them because we're just coasting off of the societal momentum of how things have been for a long time. So, you know, we've just been eating pigs for a long time and eating cows for a long time, so it never occurs to you of like, oh yeah, the cheeseburger I'm eating, which is delicious, was a fucking living thing. But, you know, if you just travel to a different culture, all of a sudden that flips too. So you're in India and you don't even think about fucking eating beef because that's their holy animal or whatever. So it's weird how when something is cultural, it's just kind of accepted and we don't reflect on it nearly as much. But when you read stories like this about the incredibly high level of intelligence that some animals have, you go, well, how far does that extend? And are there moral implications when you go down the line more and more? And what animals can you eat? Should you eat? Should you eat any? I don't have good answers to these, but I think it's a fascinating conversation. And I think that there are some lines where reasonable people would agree, and you certainly shouldn't, you know, act in a savage way towards dolphins, gorillas, killer whales, so on and so forth. All right, guys, I'm out of time. I love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Mwah. I'm out.